it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
At Sierra, discover great deals on top brand workout gear, like high-quality walking shoes, which might lead to another discovery.
40,000 steps, baby! Who's on top now, Karen?
You've taken the office step challenge a step too far. Don't worry, though. Sierra also has yoga gear. It might be a good place to find your zen. Discover top brands at unexpectedly low prices. Sierra, let's get moving.
When did making plans get this complicated? It's time to streamline with WhatsApp, the secure messaging app that brings the whole group together. Use polls to settle dinner plans. Send event invites and pin messages so no one forgets mom's 60th. And never miss a meme or milestone. All protected with end-to-end encryption. It's time for WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone. Learn more at whatsapp.com.
This episode is brought to you by Jack Daniels. Jack Daniels and music are made for each other. They share a rhythm in the craft of making something timeless while being a part of legendary nights. From backyard jams to sold-out arenas, there's a song in every toast. Please drink responsibly. Responsibility.org. Jack Daniels and Old No. 7 are registered trademarks. Tennessee Whiskey, 40% alcohol by volume. Jack Daniel Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Welcome in to another brand new edition of Rico Bronya, episode number 569. We got a lot to cover on today's edition of the Rico. The Mets have added to their coaching staff after getting rid of all of their coaches. We will discuss it. Some more interesting things said by Eric Chavez in the interview he did last week. We'll play some of that. And I believe we now know for sure if Tarek Skubal is going to be traded or not by the Detroit Tigers. We'll get to all that, and we're going to read a lot of your emails here on today's podcast. So a lot to cover, a lot to discuss. Let's start with the coaching hires that the Mets have added, adding Kai Correa to be their bench coach and Jeff Albert to be whatever job title they're calling this, the director of hitting. Let me start with Kai Correa. So I'm not going to crap on the hire because the truth is, and I think most of us would be honest if we said this, we didn't know much about Kai Correa before the hiring. We basically had to go to Google and find out what is his resume. And his resume is fine. You know, it's a guy who served as a Giants bench coach, an infield instructor, a guy that had 3 games of managing experience because he was the interim manager after they fired Gabe Kapler, and did apparently a really good job in Cleveland as the major league field coordinator. The hope is the Met defense, which was at times an issue in 2025, can be improved by a better field coordinator or really better positioning. And I do think that's a very underrated aspect of defense. You know, we see the positions of players and the way they're positioned, and we know it's based on data and whatever studies they're doing, but there are many times. I noticed this a lot watching the Yankees over the last couple of years, but certainly with the Mets, where guys feel like they're out of position. And it's certainly fair as a fan to question, why was he positioned there? Now, we're not getting into the cooking of the meal to know, so you just almost have to have this blind faith that the guys inside the front office and the guys on the coaching staff know what the hell they're doing. But the hope is that Kai Correa is a young guy with experience in Cleveland and San Francisco, and that's going to be an aspect of the Mets that will improve. That the data that he collects and then gives to said players and Carlos Mendoza will benefit the run prevention that David Stearns talked about. So do I know much about Kai Correa? No. Am I going to rip the hire? That would be disingenuous. But it would also be disingenuous for me to sit here on the Rico and tell you how brilliant it is. I mean, how would I know that? And even the baseball experts, they don't know it either. They're doing it based on what people are telling them. And let me tell you a little secret about what people are telling you. I'll never forget this. And this is why I'll never get too excited about an unknown hire, nor would it be fair to me to go the other way and say it stinks. I'm not going to do either. I'll never forget when the Mets hired Mickey Callaway to be their manager. Terry Francona, who we all respect, one of the great managers, future Hall of Famer, was just effusive in his praise for Mickey Callaway. Oh, the Mets got it right. They know what they're doing. What a great manager he's going to be. First of all, Terry didn't tell us that Mickey Callaway was scum. He left that part out. And was also an abysmal manager. So whenever I hear the high praises, it's not that you want to ignore it. It's that you always look at everything with a skeptical eye. So my opinion on Kai Correa, I hope it works out. The one thing I disagree with, and I've heard a few people on my radio station say this, Gio said this, the Midday guy said this, and I get why they said it. I disagree with them. The idea that Kai Correa is now next in line to replace Carlos Mendoza if things go badly in 2026. I'll tell you why I disagree with that. And it's just my opinion, but I'm giving you my strong opinion on the subject. If things go badly in 2026, there's no doubt Mendy's on the hot seat. I'm not denying that. A part of that is why I had suggested in some earlier recos the idea of Beltran being a bench coach or Willie Randolph being a bench coach, or even if the Phillies had fired Rob Thomson with the history that Thomson has with Mendy, Rob Thomson being the bench coach. Obviously, they didn't go in any of those directions. Rob is staying in Philadelphia, so that wasn't an option. I thought having an experienced bench coach serves two purposes. Number one, having a guy who just can kind of, you can lean on for experience, a guy who's seen the wars, a guy who's seen the battles. Not that Beltran has managerial experience, but he certainly has the experience of playing in New York and being a part of a team that was an infamous collapsing team. So I thought those ideas made sense, and it also put the heat on Mendy to know, hey, if things don't work out, this guy's going to be the manager. I do not believe that Kai Correa, even though he may be a manager someday, I'm not disputing that. I think the Mets were enamored with him a few cycles ago and were intrigued by him like other teams have been as a future manager. It doesn't mean he won't ever be the manager. I don't think he was hired as the, hey, if things go bad for Mendy, he's going to take over. I think he was literally hired because they got rave reviews on the kind of field coordinating work he did in Cleveland and how he can improve that aspect of this Mets team. I don't believe he's here to replace Carlos Mendoza. And I'll take it a step further because I do want to be specific. If things go badly and the Mets remove Carlos Mendoza, I think that they would go in one of two directions. And I'll give you names, just me speculating. And both of those guys have somewhat managerial experience. Number one, I think they could easily move Carlos Beltran downstairs. He's involved in the organization. He's got relationships with players. And Carlos is probably at the point where he wasn't going to take a coaching job, but is still a part of this organization. And I've always felt since his dismissal, there was that chance at some point for him to finally get that crack to be a manager. It didn't happen with Buck Showalter when Steve Cohen took over. Thought it was possible. Didn't happen, obviously, when they removed Buck Showalter and David Stearns took over. But the fact he's in the organization leads me to believe there's always a chance of that happening. So I think that's legitimate. I think if they moved on from Mendy in the middle of the year because they were underachieving, think of Willie Randolph 2008, I think Beltran's a possibility. I think the other possibility, not as sexy, is Andy Green. Andy Green is in the front office. He's got managerial experience, even if it wasn't good in San Diego for a bunch of years. I think he's going to get another managerial job at some point. So I think those are the two guys that would be the candidates to be an in-season replacement. I know logically it's the bench coach. I totally get why guys say that. Like, it's based on logic. It's based on all of our logic that most of the time when a manager gets fired, that's what you do. I just don't think that's the case in this situation. And think about this. When guys get fired in the middle of the year, I'm not talking about the end of the year, the way Kai Correa took over for Gabe Kapler. I'm talking about middle of the season firings. More times than not, the guys have either managerial experience or heavy coaching experience, like Rob Thomson. Rob Thomson didn't have managing experience, but he was a longtime coach. You know, you think of Jerry Manuel when he took over for Willie Randolph. same kind of thing. I think of Bobby Valentine when he took over for Dallas Green. So more times than not, especially when you're a team trying to win, I think that midseason hiring, and I hope none of this is the case, by the way. It's not like I'm talking about this because I want it. I mean, the hope is the Mets have a damn successful season and they're not firing Carlos Mendoza, obviously. But I don't think that Kai Correa is being hired as the replacement for Mendy. I think he's being hired because he's got a good reputation and the Mets are changing their coaching staff in a major way. The other hire was Jeff Albert, who's been in the organization for the last couple of years. I think the title was director of minor league hitting. Again, I can't crap on this. Does he have good experience with the Astros and the Cardinals? Sure. Is he respected in the Met organization? Sure. Here's the thing that's important. Because when it comes to coaching, you know, we talk about this in the middle of seasons when things are going bad. It's easy to say, fire the coach, fire the coach. And if you recall, if you've been listening to the Rico all year, I was never in the middle of the season a big fan of, oh, they got to fire Eric Chavez. They got to fire Jeremy Barnes. Like, you want to do it, fine. But usually, it's a panic move. So I like to listen. I like to hear, okay, what was going on behind the scenes? What needs to be better? What needs to be worse? So when listening to that Eric Chavez interview he did with Foul Territory, I listened carefully. Not because Eric Chavez is the czar and because everything he says I'm going to agree with or trust, but because he was in the room. And now, when you're doing interviews after you've been fired, you have every reason to just be honest. Now, you have every reason to protect yourself, absolutely, but you have every reason to be honest. So Eric Chavez was asked specifically about what he would change about his time with the New York Mets. I want you to listen to this answer, and we will respond on how and if the Mets are changing the one major critique Eric Chavez had about his job and the structure of his job.
To me, it's not an offensive league anymore.
Stop it right there. I apologize, Hoff. That's him talking about offenses, which I do want to get to because it was fascinating. It's the other Eric Chavez clip when he talks about the things he would change about the job that he had as the hitting coach. Go ahead.
From the hitting standpoint, somebody had asked me, from the hitting department, if there's anything I would have changed. And Jeremy Barnes did a great job. Him and I did a really good job of speaking different languages, believing in certain and different things, coming from two different worlds, and making it work together for the better of the group. And that was the conversation him and I always had. We never disagreed on anything, right? We might have looked at each other and go, man, this guy is full of it, or I disagree with him. But whatever it was, we made sure that we brought it to the group that him and I were on the same page. The only thing that I had mentioned, and I think Jeremy would agree with this too, you cannot have two head hitting coaches. Mm-hmm. Like players get confused when there's multiple voices. From my standpoint, I try to give Jeremy kind of his space because he did so much and the players were very accustomed to kind of him being in the leadership role. And then when I left to be the bench coach for that 1 year under Buck, and then I came back into the hitter's role, you know, Jeremy had established himself in his voice. And so, you know, to make it work, I kind of gave him his space. And moving forward, and I said this to Lindor a couple months back, said, I'll never do the co thing ever again. Like there should never be, you know, things are set up when there's a head guy, an assistant, when roles are defined, when there's one voice, I think is the best situation moving forward. But, whatever the Mets do, they're going to do. But I was asked that question. I said, the only thing probably that, you know, needed to change was, you know, I don't think two hitting coaches is the way to go.
Interesting answer. You know what jumped out at me? It jumped out at me that he was telling Lindor months ago. So in the middle of the season, as he's still employed as one of the hitting coaches, I'll never do this again. I find that interesting. Like you're in the middle of doing the job and you're basically saying, I'll never want to do this again. It makes a lot of sense what he's saying. It does. And when I heard him say that, the first thing I wanted to do was ask myself, but I don't know the answer. So really ask Google, how many teams have multiple hitting coaches? And the truth is most teams have multiple hitting coaches. Like that is a very common thing. It may feel uncommon because that wasn't the case 10 years ago, But in 2025, you do have numerous hitting coaches. But what he hit on was that there needs to be a structure. And it makes a lot of sense. Like, if you have co's of anything, there's always going to be an alpha. There's always going to be someone who has a little bit louder of a voice than the other. And if that role isn't defined clearly, then you're running into problems. Like, logically, Eric Chavez and Jeremy Barnes would butt heads. Now, according to Eric Chavez, that wasn't an issue. But I can see how for players, maybe not Juan Soto, who should never be touched, but for other guys who are leaning on coaching help, you've got two completely different voices, two guys with completely different experiences. And while it's good to have different voices, it may not be good to not have the proper structure. So I think that's a fair critique from Eric Chavez. I think it makes a lot of sense, even for us that weren't in the room. And so the early returns on the Jeff Albert hiring is that he's the guy, that they're going to hire hitting coaches, maybe more than one, maybe a couple, but they're going to work for Jeff Albert. And that kind of makes more sense. The command makes sense. You know, the chain of command, I guess, is the phrase I'm looking for. So it does sound like the Mets are going to follow that and not have two guys that are basically considered equals. Will Jeff Albert do a great job with these guys? None of us know. I can't make that any more clear when it comes to these coaching hires, good or bad. I am not going to kill it. I'm not going to love it. I'm not going to be delusional. I'm going to say, okay, you better get the job done. Albert's got a fine resume. He has experience, especially with a lot of the younger players that may be called up this year. That's fine. So those are the first two hires that David Stearns has added to this new look coaching staff. In terms of Mendy and his say on these hires, I don't think he needs to have a lot of say on it. I don't think he needs to handpick these guys. You obviously want to have good relationships. I think that's important. So there needs to be a good, solid working relationship between Mendy and the guys on his staff, because ultimately, Mendy runs the coaching staff. I know we all talk so much about how it's the front office. Look, the front office has a lot of power and gives a lot of information, but on a day-to-day basis, it's Carlos Mendoza who's running kind of that coaching room. So obviously, you'd want them to all have, you know, at least a decent working relationship. The pitching coach hire, going to be fascinating. Keep an eye on that one. So any opinions on the coaching hires, good or bad, you can email us, and we will certainly respond over the next few episodes, therico@gmail.com. They did sign a player, Joe Jakes, a side-arming left-hander who's got a career minor league ERA that's not very good and has a handful of major league experience that's not very good. Here's what I will remind everybody, because I think we forget. When David Stearns and the Mets add players in the middle of October, it's because free agency hasn't started. And so they're adding guys, usually minor leaguers, who just happen to be available. And much like last year, they're going to add a lot of names of people that either we've never heard of, or when we go to the baseball reference page, we're unimpressed by. This is a phase of the offseason. It doesn't mean this is what you're doing to improve the bullpen, Joe Jakes. It doesn't mean any of that. It is a phase of the offseason. And when you sign a bunch of minor leaguers, a bunch of guys who are going to get spring training invites, or by the way, may not even end up getting spring training invites. They may be here and then gone and then here again and then gone again. You never know. The hope is on a few of them, you'll hit. On a few of those guys, we'll be sitting here in the middle of August saying, wow, I forgot when David Stearns signed that guy. That move worked out. It's not going to be the majority of them. It's not even going to be 30% of them. But you hope every once in a while they hit. All I know about Joe Jakes, besides a very unimpressive baseball reference page, is he's a local kid and he's a side-arming lefty. And who doesn't look a side-arming lefty? Whenever I think of a side-arming lefty, it's really a submarine.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And
yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know why it's not outside of Cleveland. You know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why fans. It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Meaning lefty. I think of Mike Myers, not the actor, not the serial killer or the character from the movies, but the side-arming left-hander, the former Brewer left-handed reliever. And for whatever reason, I think of John Olerud taking him deep. That's just me. Now, let me get to Tarek Skubal. Obviously, the Tigers season ended. The president of the Detroit Tigers, Scott Harris, did like an entire one-hour media session recapping the season, kind of like what David Stearns did. So somebody's doing a Tiger podcast, the Bobby Higginson, and they're probably breaking down everything that Scott Harris said. The only thing I cared about, and I want to share it with everybody listening, is what he said about Tarek Skubal. Tarek Skubal, again, is a free agent at the end of next season. So there's one more year of control of the best pitcher in baseball. And you could understand, like, would the Tigers trade him? If they're not going to sign him, are the Tigers going to try to win a World Series? Are the Tigers going to try to win a World Series and then re-sign him? What do you think they're going to do? I want to play you Scott Harris's answer to the question about Tarek Skubal, and then we could all examine ourselves what we think they're going to do. So here's the question and the answer from Tigers president, Scott Harris.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. When your computer breaks, you don't wait for it to magically start working again. You fix the problem. So why wait to hire the people your company desperately needs? Use Indeed sponsored jobs to hire top talent fast. And even better, you only pay for results. There's no need to wait. Speed up your hiring with a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, it's Boomer and Geo, and if you're into New York sports or you want straight talk about what's really going on in the sports world, Boomer and Geo is your show.
We're covering it all. Yankees wins, Giants drama, national headlines, and whatever chaos the day brings on the field and off.
No filler, no filters, just real conversation, and believe me, plenty of laughs every weekday morning.
We don't hold back, and we don't waste your time. We get to what actually matters.
That's Boomer and Geo, and you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
The holidays have arrived at the Home Depot, and we're here to help bring the excitement with decor for every part of your home. Check out our wide assortment of easy-to-assemble pre-lit trees so you can spend less time setting up and more time celebrating. And bring your holiday spirit outdoors with unique decor like one of our Santa inflatables. Whatever your style, find the right pieces at the right prices this holiday season at the Home Depot.
Tarek's obviously going into the final year of his controllability. How much of a decision point is that this off season, or are you just, I mean, are you kind of prepared to go into the season with him and see how it kind of how it rolls that way?
Yeah, I totally understand the question, and I understand that you have to ask me. I've kind of learned over time, especially with this question, that general comments tend to get chopped up and forced into narratives. I can't comment on our players being traded. I can't comment on free agents, and I can't comment on other teams' players. So I'm going to respond by just not actually commenting on it. Tarek is a Tiger. I hope he wins the Cy Young for the second consecutive year. He's an incredible pitcher, and we're lucky to have him. That's all I can say on that.
Now, Pete, you tell me, all right? You just heard the question. You heard the answer. Basically, Scott Harris said, I ain't saying a freaking word. Do you take that as they're going to trade Tarek Skubal, or do you take it as they're not trading Tarek Skubal?
I take that as they hope he wins an award before he leaves to go to a different team. That's what I think.
Really? That's how you take it?
I take it as he's going to be traded. Yes.
It's the amazing thing about words and interpretations. So at first, I thought, oh, he doesn't want to answer the question. They're going to trade him. And then I played it for Tiki. And Tiki was like, within 5 seconds of the clip starting, said, they're not trading him. And he convinced me. Like, the more I thought about it and I listened to it a few times and we just played it now, I don't think they're trading him. I think it was Scott's way of saying, I'm not even going to give you a story. We just made the playoffs. We have a chance to win the World Series. We're going to keep him. And so my official prediction based on Scott's answer, and we'll see if I'm right or not, is that they're not going to trade Tarek Skubal.
But then why don't you just say simply, No, we're not trading him.
It's an option. But he also didn't say everything's on the table. Like, he could have opened the door more. He could have closed it, I guess. I keep thinking of Chris Young saying that about Jacob DeGrom over the summer when there were rumors about the Rangers cutting salary. And he was like, definitive, I'm not trading him. I think this is just a smart-ass team president saying, I'm not going to give you anything. But my vibe on it is they're not going to trade him. Now, listen, I don't want to get you in trouble, Hoff, so you don't have to comment on this. I will, because I don't give a rat's ass. I don't know what we do with podcasts. I guess apparently in the Rico Bronya feed, we air other podcasts like short clips. And I guess they do that with us, which I guess we appreciate. Like maybe there's a Rico Bronya in another podcast. So I got emails about this and I did listen to it. Apparently on the Rico Bronya feed, we were posting a 20-minute clip from the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast. And let me make myself clear. I like the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast. I have no issue with it. The 20 minutes we posted on our feed was awful. I will say that. And it's nothing against the actual podcast. It was just awful. And I think the reason it was awful to me is because we're a Met podcast. And everything about their discussion was so condescending towards us. It was the host, and I forget his name. He's a good dude. Nothing against him. He was very whatever about Met fans and Met player or the Met front office, what they would say about a trade. There was another guy who didn't even know how to pronounce Carson Benj's name, putting together a fake trade for Tarek Skubal. And by the way, I don't know who edited it, 15 minutes before they got to the trade. So there's a 25-minute clip, and the first 10 minutes is them BSing about stuff I do not care about. And I don't think anybody in the audience cares about, okay? So A, the clip was awful. Not that the podcast is, because the podcast is fine. It's a good podcast. I advise Baseball Isn't Boring is fine. But the clip sucked. And then what really bothered me, and I don't care, I'm going to say it, is it was so condescending to Met fans. First of all, I got a guy making a fake trade. And by the way, I'm giving them a nice plug. People are now going to want to listen to this horrible clip. So it works for everybody. But it's basically this guy, I don't know who he is, putting together a trade for Tarek Skubal. And the host is like, oh, well, you know, here's what the Mets are going to say. They're going to say Nolan McLean is better than Tarek Skubal, whatever. And I'm not even dismissing the opinions. I'm saying no Met fan wanted to hear that. So Why that was on our feed, not my call. If I'm going to get an angry email about it, that's fine. I'll just repeat the same thing I'm saying now, which is, why is that on our feed? But I commented on it because I got like 10 emails of people saying, what the hell was that? And basically the guy who didn't know how to pronounce Carson Benj's name proposed that the Mets would have to trade Jet Williams, Nolan McLean, Carson Benj, and David Peterson for Tarek Skubal. Now, the Tigers should ask for that. Like, I'm not even pissed about that. Like, the Detroit Tigers just went to the playoffs. They have a chance to win a World Series. They have every right to say, yeah, we're going to want this, and this. So I don't even have a problem with the trade offer. I had a problem with the condescending tone both guys had, especially on a Met feed where anyone downloading the Rico is probably a Met fan that wants like our perspectives on it, not somebody who's going to dismiss what Met fans think about it.
Right. Anyway,
the trade is fine. And I do understand that if you're the Tigers and you are coming off a year in which you were better than the Mets, I mean, you were in the division series. You got to the fifth game. There is no reason to want to trade him. And I think that if you are going to entertain a trade offer, Scott Harris has every right, rightfully so, to ask for that kind of absurd demand. I would tell you right now, with all due respect to Tarek Skubal, I would need a drug test to say yes to that trade. And that's not a knock on Skubal. It's more, I'm not doing that for 1 year of control.
Right.
Well, I can sign the guy in a year anyway. And with Steve Cohen, they very well could. So I'm open to talking to Detroit, but if it ever got to that kind of level of McLean, Benj, Jet Williams, David Peterson, I would have to politely say I'm out. I would not be comfortable making a trade like that. Now, if that same offer was for Paul Skeens, we're having a different discussion.
Well, right. You're talking about
control. I can't do that.
You're talking about a control for multiple years. Like, I mean, I don't even know, Skeens, how many years of arbitration has he even had yet?
Is none.
He even there yet? Right, exactly. Like, so you're talking about a guy who's ample amount of years. You can sign him lifetime, whatever, compared to Scooble, who we're talking about a rental for a year. You got to cross your fingers you're going to be able to keep him around. And he's older.
But this is why he won't be traded. He won't be traded because if you're the Tigers coming off back-to-back postseason appearances with the best pitcher in baseball, you would need an absurd return to trade him. And I don't think anyone gives you an absurd return knowing there's only 1 year left of control. So I think between his answer and the more you just logically think about it, it's just not happening. I don't think the Tarek Skubal trade is going to happen unless, look, you want to tell me the Tigers have a crappy year and it's the middle of July. Oh, of course. I think that changes everything. But in terms of the offseason, they're going to want an absurd return. And I don't think anyone would give it based on the control.
So I know that this it happens a little bit and it's odd when it happens. But why in baseball don't they do more sign and trades? Like, hey, we'll sign you long term.
Can't. There are rules against that. They don't. This isn't the NBA. Just can't do that.
Why can't you do?
I think when you sign a free agent, you can't be traded till June 15th or something like that. It doesn't work that way. And why would that happen, by the way? Walk me through why? Who does that benefit? Like in the NBA, there are salary cap implications for it. Why would someone be signed and then traded? I don't understand.
Well,
you're a free agent, you can sign wherever you want.
Okay, but you still have control for a year, right? Like for Tarek Skubal. So technically, hey, let's sign, give you an extension, and then we can market you and we can get a hell of a lot more back.
Oh, I got you. So you're saying why don't the Tigers – look, I think the issue with Skubal is that he's a Boris guy. He's not signing. Like I don't think Tarek Skubal is signing with anybody, even if he was traded to the Mets, unless the Mets gave him, you know, 10 years, $400 million, like some absurd over-the-edge contract. He's going to get to free agency. You're talking about the best pitcher in baseball. You're talking about Scott Boris. It's going to be free agency. And that's like the other part of this. How much are you willing to give up for a guy that even though Steve Cohen is a billionaire, you're still going to have to dance in free agency? That you're still going to have to risk that somebody else decides to outbid you. And even though we have this confidence that Cohen won't be outbid based on what happened with Juan Soto, it's still a major risk. So, not going to happen. I hope I'm wrong. I mean, it'd be great if Tarek Skubal's a Met, but I just don't see it.
He left the door open by not saying anything.
Maybe slightly, by not just completely refuting it. I'm waiting for the DeGrom question since Texas is clearly going to slash payroll, which is a part of why Bruce Bochy said, I don't want to be here anymore. Right, let me get to some of your emails. There's a lot of people who have strong disagreements, whether it's on our gradings or some of the other things we've talked about over the last few Ricos, so I do want to get to a bunch of them at thericob@gmail.com. This one's good. Anthony writes, and he connects it with episode 567. So you can go back and listen to this episode and hear what he is mad about. Evan, love the damn Rico. Sometimes, though, what a start. Love the damn Rico. Sometimes, though, I want to punch you in the face. He didn't say that, but maybe we'll get there. Evan, love the damn Rico sometimes, though. Last week or so, post-disaster, you said, quote, nothing wrong with the locker room and pushed out about how they were fine. I wrote and said these gutless oafs had no leadership, just an overpaid, self-absorbed, bald-headed grump making $80 million and tying the team down like an anchor, and no one yelling at the players to get their collective heads out of their butts. Then a week later, you go on a, quote, well, maybe they should get Stanton. He's the leader. That seems important. And the Yankees responded. Pay him $20 million just to tell the players to play hard, rant. Really? Everyone not with their heads in the close and late stat sheet knew these bums weren't playing hard. And now, because of a report in The Athletic, you think it might be true? Grrr. And then Anthony takes a shot at what we were just taking a shot at. the whole podcast thing. First of all, do I say that much? If you go back to episode 567, are you really going to hear me go, Stanton, Stanton? Let me clarify, Anthony. I do not think the New York Mets missed the playoffs because of the locker room. I do not think that Juan Soto not following Francisco Lindor on Instagram is why the team crumbled for 2.5 months. With that said, do I think that they missed a little bit of the JD Martinez edge in leadership? Sure. Was it the same perfect locker room it was a year earlier? It was not. I do not think, and if this is a contradiction, Anthony, and anyone else, fine, call me out on it. I don't think it is. I'm giving you my honest opinions. I do not think the locker room was why the Mets failed. But I also think they could use more leadership. Is that a contradiction? I'm not saying like the locker room blew and they need it desperately. I'm saying as I'm looking to build this roster, as I'm looking to fix the issues of 2025, I'm looking not at just more talent, but could they use a JD Martinez-like leader? I don't believe that's a contradiction. Maybe to Anthony it is. So when I read about what Giancarlo Stanton did and has done in the Yankee locker room, I see that and say, boy, they could use that leadership. And oh, by the way, he's better than Starling Marte. And Starling Marte's role as a leader, but also as a right-handed DH, it's kind of the same role. And financially, Marte made last year what Stanton would make this year. So I kind of view it as you can improve the room, give you that JD Martinez kick in the ass that they missed. And by the way, improve yourself offensively with a baseball player who I think still can play. So I appreciate the email, but it's not as if I was ever telling you, while dismissing the leadership as the reason they lost, that should be squarely ignored during the offseason. I don't think that's a contradiction. That's my honest opinion on the subject. It matters. It just doesn't maybe matter as much as the way you described it. Fred writes, is it wrong that I'm watching the NLCS with a woulda, coulda, shoulda attitude? I get that Cohen offered $325 million to Yamamoto 2 years ago, and that Snell had a ton of red flags last winter, but seeing both of them dominate just makes me feel Stearns must get the shutdown ace this winter. I understand the hesitation of not paying SPs, but wouldn't you rather push your chips in for someone with the upside of Yamamoto or Snell versus hoping Manaea can duplicate his 2024 or Senga can stay healthy? My God, what an absolute disaster from Stearns. I can't wait for his grading episode. His grading episode will be live on YouTube on Friday night. And for those that download the podcast, it should be up sometime Friday night, early Saturday morning. We are grading David Stearns and Carlos Mendoza, but mostly David Stearns, on the next edition of the Rico Bronya. I was actually going to do it today. We pushed it back to address the coaching changes and some of your emails. We have a very fluid Rico Bronya schedule. Hoff will tell you, I have a whole schedule through November, but card is subject to change. When there is breaking news or things that are worth talking about, not a part of the schedule, we'll always move things around. Right, Pete?
Yeah, let me tell you something. If you think you're going to go a couple weeks without hearing from something from Evan, you're dead wrong. He's got everything planned out.
A couple of weeks? We don't go more than a couple of days.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I'm going to do this real quick. I'm not going to give you the dates because the dates are subject to change. I'm going to tell you the next 10 Rico Bronyas with breaking news ones definitely mixed in. Are you ready? So everyone can have an idea of where the Rico is going. And it's basically every 2 days. That's essentially we're giving you Ricos this offseason, 3 a week on average. Anyhow, a deep dive of 0-70, a Juan Soto deep dive, replacing Pete Alonso, replacing Edwin Diaz, ranking and assessing the Mets free agent.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Free agent starting pitchers, free agent relievers, free agent position players, Trademark it for starting pitchers. Trademark it for bats. And that takes you right into the middle of November. So we've got, all of those will be their own episode. So we got a lot of Ricos coming your way. Let me address, though, Fred's email. It's a great email. Yamamoto, look, this is 2 years ago. My opinion, if you're a new Rico listener, was that they should have offered more. That in that moment, if you are trying to outbid the Dodgers and you're trying to outbid the Yankees, and remember where the Mets were in this moment, they were coming off of a brutal season. They had not signed Juan Soto. Steve Cohen was more bark than bite. So I said on the Rico, certainly on WFAN, if you want the player, you're going to have to make it really uncomfortable. And because he was 25 years old, I thought it was worth it. Risks attached, I thought it was worth it. And so my criticism upon missing out on Yamamoto was, you need to go further. You need to shock and awe. You need to CC the guy. And by CC the guy, I mean CC Sabathia didn't want to be a Yankee. He became a Yankee because the Yankees overbid by so much. So I would have loved for Yamamoto to be a Met. They went high. They didn't go high enough. When it comes to Snell and it comes to any other big-time pitcher, I am not in the David Stern school of I don't want to give these guys over 30 long-term deals. And if David's not in that school, he's got to prove that we're wrong. He could say her all day and say, oh, no, I'd be willing. You haven't done it yet. I mean, 3-year deal for Sean Manaea doesn't exactly qualify. But it depends on the person. And clearly, I'm not always right because the guy I would have bid big on last year was Corbin Burns. And we all know how that went. But I do think it is worth going after big-time starting pitchers. Maybe not five of them. Maybe not to the level of what the Dodgers did. I mean, think about the amount of contracts they've got locked in. Traded and signed Tyler Glasnow, Blake Snell, Yamamoto. I can't include Otani because it's a two-way thing, but you get the point. Even the Yankees with Rodon and Freed and Cole. I'm not saying it's got to be 3-4 guys, but I would do it for a guy or two. And you're right, Fred. Like, you are seeing the benefit of it in the postseason, especially the postseason. But that leads me to the other Chavez clip I do want to play because I've had this argument with a lot of people, and Eric Chavez basically – not that he was attacking me. He probably don't know much about me. But he made an opinion known about offenses and pitching in terms of winning in 2025. I'll let you listen to Eric Chavez's opinion, and then we'll break it down. Here's Eric Chavez from the Foul Territory podcast last week.
When it comes to what your family eats and drinks, you know your choices matter. You're the expert because you know what fits your life. And getting it right starts with good information. That's why America's beverage companies are sharing more information about our ingredients at goodtoknowfacts.org. No spin, no judgments, just the facts straight from the experts for more than 140 beverage ingredients. Visit goodtoknowfacts.org.
So good, so good, so good.
Just in, thousands of winter arrivals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 70% on coats, slippers, and cashmere from Kate Spade, New York, Vince, UGG, Levi's, and more.
Check out these boots.
They've got the best gifts.
My holiday shopping hack? Join the Nordy Club.
Get an extra 5% off every Rack purchase with your Nordstrom credit card. Plus, buy it online and pick it up in-store the same day for free. Big gifts, big perks. That's why you Rack.
To me, it's not an offensive league anymore. You know, the pitchers are dominating. The stuff is too good. I heard you guys talking about the Brewers and Cubs and the Brewers or the Cubs not adding on runs. Like, it's just not that easy. You know, the mop-up guys that are coming in the fifth inning are throwing 100 with a 93-mile-an-hour slider. It's a very difficult game to be, you know, to score runs. And I like what the Brewers and the Cubs have done with the pitching being so elite. This is the one thing, this is the only kind of trump card the offense has, is to have some speed and to have guys that put contact on the baseball consistently.
Okay. Now, Brian Reed wrote an email kind of bringing up the same thing. He said, Evan, in one of the spring training shows, you went through how teams that finish something like the top 8 in offense make the playoffs, even if their pitching isn't great. And if I recall, the emphasis on the episode was heavily offensive based, with a little true focus on quality pitching over quantity. Very much the Stearns model, as well as it seems. I hope everyone in the front office is watching the playoffs. Offense may get you to the dance, but pitching has always won it. The Mariners, aside from one game, are putting on a literal clinic. Every team not named the Yankees and Reds have pitched well. The Blue Jays are proving, two games into the ALCS, that no matter how potent an offense you have, great pitching shuts you down. It's nice to beat up on the bad teams and bad pitching during the year, but that's not sustainable in the playoffs. Okay. Before I attack the playoff aspect, let me address Chavez and even Brian to a degree about offense and pitching and what matters more. I am going to go through very quickly the top offenses in Major League Baseball from 2025. I'm going to tell you the team. I'm going to tell you how many runs they scored, and then we'll all play together, playoff team or non-playoff team. So if you're in your car, the New York Yankees are number one in offense. I'd say New York Yankees. You'd say playoffs. Okay? New York Yankees, 5.24 runs per game. Playoffs! Los Angeles Dodgers, 5.09 runs per game. Playoffs! You can join in, Hoff. Milwaukee Brewers, number three, 4.98 runs per game. Playoffs! Toronto Blue Jays, they're now fourth, 4.93 runs per game. Playoffs! Chicago Cubs, 4.9 runs per game. We are now up to fifth. Playoffs! Now, here we go. We're about to get crazy because we're going to have our first exception. The Arizona Diamondbacks, 4.88 runs per game. No playoffs. Boston Red Sox, 4.85. Playoffs. Philadelphia Phillies, 4.80. Playoffs. All right, this one's uncomfortable. New York Mets, 4.73. No playoffs. Seattle Mariners, 4.73. Playoffs. That's your top 10. Eight of the top 10 teams in runs scored made the playoffs. But Evan, what about preventing runs? So I'm not even going to use ERA. I'm going to go with runs allowed per game, because at the end of the day, if you made a lot of errors and runs scored and they were unearned, like, those still count. So let's play the game again. Again, eight out of the 10 offenses, top 10 offenses, eight of them made the playoffs, including the top six. Let's hear about runs prevented. Number one, fewest runs allowed, 3.73. The Texas Rangers, no playoffs. Number two, San Diego Padres, 3.83 runs per game, playoffs. Milwaukee Brewers, 3.91, playoffs. All right, playoff. Two out of three playoff teams. Okay. Kansas City Royals, 3.93. No playoffs. Pittsburgh Pirates, 3.98 runs allowed per game. No playoffs.
So three out of five.
Three out of the top five teams at preventing runs from being scored missed the playoffs. Now, if I go down the list, there are going to be more playoff teams. The Phillies, playoffs. The Guardians, playoffs. The Cubs, playoffs. The Astros, no playoffs. The Red Sox, playoffs. The Reds, playoffs. The Rays, no playoffs. The Giants, no playoffs. That's before we ever get to the Dodgers, Yankees, Tigers, Mariners. So if we are just looking at the regular season, my point remains as strong as ever. You score runs, you make the playoffs. You prevent runs, look, still a good chance you make the playoffs, just not as good of a chance as scoring runs. I don't think that can be disputed. I think the last 4 years of data shows you that, but that wasn't the point Brian made. And I do want to address that. He talked about the playoffs. Is it different come postseason time? You're right, it is. Now, it's not always an exact science. You know, you look at different years, like the Diamondbacks 2 years ago getting to a World Series and not exactly doing it with a loaded pitching staff. So it is not an exact science, but I am not going to be disingenuous and tell you that not having aces isn't a big deal. Of course it is. When you have someone as locked in as Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who had a Cy Young year this year, he's not going to win it because of Paul Skeens, but he had a Cy Young year this year. Yeah, it does feel like good pitching beats good hitting. And so you're right. Like, when it comes to winning a championship, I want an ace. It was something that gave Detroit a real edge. I think Seattle's got a lot of really good pitching, even if they may not have the, you know, customary ace. I don't even think the Blue Jays have a customary ace. Like, Kevin Gausman's okay, but come on, we're going to call him an ace now? I don't think that. I think the Yankees had an ace with Max Fried, and we'll see about Gerrit Cole when he comes back. The Cubs certainly didn't. The Phillies did. There aren't a lot of them, is the point. Like, they just don't grow on trees. But I get it. Like, I totally get the point of offense will get you to the dance and pitching will take you to that next level. I'm not arguing about the next level, but you got to get there. And how do you get there? You get there by scoring a lot of runs. So I get that point. I get the whole, you know, don't you want the ace? Don't you need an ace and all that? Yeah, I mean, sure, come postseason time. It's part of why we are going to talk about the Mets adding top-line pitching, not just for the sake of when you're in a losing streak during the regular season or your bullpen is tired, that guy can really stop the bleeding. All that's true. But I think also because, yeah, to your point, come postseason time, that guy gives you a better chance. That guy gives you the better chance of putting it all together. So I get it, but I still stand by my point to you. And I think the data has shown it that you got to score runs. You got to score runs. Let me get to a few of your emails in regards to some of the grades that we laid out, because there was some anger about our grades, including Tom. Tom writes, I love you, but your grades are way too biased. Recency bias, some people had a bad second half, and we all feel like crap. This was one of the worst seasons of Met baseball I've ever watched. I've watched every game for about 20 years, since 2007. That was fast. That was a master of failure. To go from the best record of baseball over like 90 games to just not failing, but so directly on a path to potential failure that it was the last game of the year is effing awful. But the team was above 500. The team was an above average team. I don't think expectations are relevant, but I do think that some of your grades were emotionally too low. Following some notes. Now, he wrote a lot of kind of critiques on the grades, but the one that really pissed me off, and I appreciate the email, so I don't want you to think I'm pissed off at you, but I have to read his Jose Siri thing because this one jumped out at me. I gave Jose Siri an F. And yeah. How could I not, right? You agree with that, right off?
Yeah, he was dog shit.
Are you ready to hear his point on why we were too tough on Jose Siri?
Yeah, give it a try, bud.
Give it a try, bud. For the record, Jose Siri as a New York Met was 2-for-32, 0.63 batting average, 2.92 OPS. He had a negative 5 WAR and had a few big defensive miscues. He writes, Jose Siri, low batting average, low availability, some defensive issues, but did you even watch the games? The guy developed an ability to take walks that was never there. And when he was on base, he scored. His on-base percentage was over 150 points better than his batting average. And per at-bat, he had as many runs and RBIs as anyone. The dude had one hit, four walks, and five runs scored. Yeah, there was an HBP or two in there. But for F's sake, that dude was Javi Baez highlights on base all five times. Stolen bases, extra bases, advancing on dirt balls, stealing third. He was effing electric. I'm not saying sign him again. I'm just saying he wasn't dirt. F is unfair considering the hell he played on the base paths. His batting average is an illusion. His impact was when he was on the field and was not meaningless. It's a D at worst, but I'd go with a C minus.
What? Dude, that's got to be from his dad or a relative or something like that.
Or he's trolling us.
Oh, well, that's a possibility.
It's got to be. I mean, come on. The guy was 2-for-32. And then he said, did you watch the games? I did watch the games. I think he was worse than 2-for-32. And now we're going to have a party because he drew four walks. I mean,
and got a couple
are we
hit
serious?
By pitches. And got a couple hit by pitches, but scored when he was on base.
By the way, he was not hit by any pitches. I looked that up. Zero.
Oh, that is definitely a troll.
I think he was trolling us, but I'll read a few more. All right, I'll read a few more. Lindor. Yeah, he couldn't carry the whole team all the way. He had his dip, but his numbers were still more than good. And down the stretch, I watched the games, and the dude came through in September when it was close. In the stretch, he was very productive and very clutch. Yeah, he had a slow spell, but for F's sake, he finished 30-30, 267 batting average, 811 OPS, and a 5.8 war. Yeah, he had some fielding issues, but that take him out of the A-plus range, maybe A range, maybe even A-minus. But WTF, what do you want? If you're going to crap on his down months, did you need him to go 40-40 with a 950 OPS? Expectations, fine. But he gave us an A-minus, B-plus at worst. He was clutch in September, as anyone could have wanted, a 900 OPS. What grade did I give Lindor? I don't think I gave him a bad grade. Didn't I give him like a B-plus or a B or something?
It was something
like
in the Bs. It wasn't a C, I know that much. You didn't give him an A.
I didn't give him an A. I didn't give anybody an A. I gave two people, if I'm not mistaken, three people A's. I gave Nolan McLean an A. I think I gave him an A. I gave Edwin Diaz an A. He was unbelievable. And I gave Luis Torrens an A, who's a finalist for the Gold Glove. So,
by the way, we missed on David Peterson. We needed to give him a higher mark, too.
Because of his defense?
Yeah, I mean, Gold Glove, hello.
He's a good defender, but I'm not impressed. I thought I gave David Peterson a good grade because most of his season was good. Like, he just fell apart at the very end. Well, our last grading, Rico, is coming up. Again, I mentioned that we will have it on YouTube on Friday night, and it'll be posted to your podcast feed at some point Friday night, Saturday morning, and that's the grading of David Stearns. I do want to make this clear about David Stearns. I understand that his job is not squarely acquiring players, that being a team president involves a lot of aspects that we aren't seeing. The development of this farm system, which is certainly occurring, it's one of the best farm systems in baseball. He deserves immense credit for it. But when we grade him, it's about the player acquisition. So it's not his grade in totality of his job, because a lot of that stuff we don't even see. It's the acquisition of players. So before I get a ton of emails, it is the acquisition of players. And we will attack that on the very next edition of the Rico Bronya.
The fact that, just going back to something we just mentioned, the Gold Glove stuff, does it bother you or anybody else that the fact is that Lindor has now missed being a finalist for Gold Glove? I mean, it wasn't his best year, but not even being considered, it's getting worse for him.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me because I think I'm over awards. I think that if a Met was a candidate for the Cy Young or for the actual MVP award, I would be more into it because, hey, the Mets have never had an MVP, so that would be special. And I'm a pitching geek, so Cy Youngs are special. But when it comes to anything else, maybe Rookie of the Year, I guess, but when it comes to Gold Gloves, it doesn't do much for me. Like, I don't think Lindor had a bad defensive season. I don't think it was his best. I don't think it was bad. But I don't lose sleep over being a finalist or not being a finalist. Why, is that bothering you, Pete?
It pisses me off a little bit. I mean, I think he gets so much disrespect. Pete Alonso gets a little disrespect. Now, the last month of the season may have taken him out of the running for any type of Gold Glove. But
I'm an Alonso defender. I am. I'm an Alonso truther. He's not a finalist for the Gold Glove.
Well,
he's not. I mean, were there times this season in which he made a lot of Gold Glove plays, and we may have said on the Rico, wow, he's a Gold Glove. Sure. Totality of the season, he's not a Gold Glove first baseman. I mean, we're going to deal with arguments about how they should get rid of him because he sucks defensively. I'm not going to go the other way now and tell you, give him a Gold Glove. He's not a Gold Glover. Is he as bad as people describe? No, but he's not a Gold Glover.
Let me just tell you something, okay? For all the people that are listening right now that don't want Pete Alonso to return, wait till we do that episode of Pete Alonso and the free agents that are available at first base, and you may change your mind. That's all I'm going to tell you. That's all I'm going to say.
All right. Whatever you say. Yeah. Hey, the pick segment is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. So far, my pick of the under in the Dodger-Brewers series going 5.5 games. So far, looking good. We'll see. But I got another pick for that Dodger-Brewers series, specifically Game 3 on Friday, assuming you're listening to this before Game 3 has started. If not, you'll already know the answer. Otani's going to get out of it. He is going through a massive batting slump right now. So I'm going to take the anytime Otani home run bet which is currently sitting at plus 240. So I am banking on Ohtani breaking out of it. Dodgers Stadium, game three. Dodgers trying to go up 3-0. Wouldn't even surprise me if it let off the game. Wouldn't surprise me. So I'm going to go Ohtani anytime home run at plus 240. Once again, that was the pick segment brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. So just to give you a rough schedule, obviously breaking news can always change this. Our next episode will be grading David Stearns. And then after that, we are going to do a deep dive on how the Mets were somehow 0-70. 0-70 when trailing after eight innings. And by deep dive, I mean we're going in. In fact, it may have to be a two-parter because it may take like hours upon hours. So that's coming up also, and a deep dive on Juan Soto's first year as a New York Met. All coming up with brand new episodes of Rico Bronya. Thank you very much for downloading and hanging out with us on another edition of The Rico.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
Doug. Limu and I always tell you to customize your car insurance and save hundreds with Liberty Mutual. But now, we want you to feel it. Cue the emu music, Limu.
Save yourself money today. Increase your wealth. Customize and save, we say.
That may have been too much feeling.
Only pay for what you need at LibertyMutual.com.
Liberty, 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 Liberty.
Savings vary. Underwritten by Liberty Mutual Insurance Company and affiliates. Excludes Massachusetts.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.